This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's September 11th, 2019. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch.
Hi.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening live, please call at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Or if you're listening to this on podcast, you can send the email out to bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or you can visit and comment at Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. Ron's rant of the week. Why do I have to keep repeating myself? Because it seems like no one's listening. Oh, well, if you are listening, then great. If you aren't listening and you might want to pass this on to someone who it may be important to, you know, pass this wonderful piece of information on, would you put down the darn cell phone while you're driving your car or stop with the distracted driving while you're driving your car. Stop looking at the giant TV set that's sitting in the center of your console while you're driving a car. Look straight ahead through the windshield and look to see the cyclist in front of you, please. This is a shout out to my friend Billy Dujack and also to Jim McPherson, who were both struck from behind while riding their bikes. Now think about this for a second. You often hear of cars being rear-ended because of a distracted driver. But a bicycle? This is pretty bad. Okay, so if it's gone to the point where it's not just cars that are getting hit by from behind, and now it's bicycles being hit from behind, we have a huge problem with distracted drivers here. I don't know if Billy's listening right now. He did say he might call in, so there's a possibility that he will reflect on this, but I did talk to him earlier this morning, and there was some chatter about that possibility. Anyway, I did check with Billy. Billy ended up doing an overnight in the hospital because of he got hit pretty good, and he had an awful lot of abrasions and other things. Plus, his back is pretty messed up from the hit in the back. Not to mention, we won't even talk about what the bike took, because the bicycle, I'm sure, if it was hit from behind, it pretty much destroys your bicycle in a big way. So, anyway, you know, cell phones, distracted driving. Hello, people. If you're driving a motorized vehicle, pay attention to where you're going. Please do not be distracted by these other things that are in your car. I now have my car set up, my phone set up so that it automatically goes over to a, I am driving right now, and you can leave a message if you wish, and I will call you back, but I am not answering the phone while driving. So I think that Billy may have just called in on this, and he can throw some words of wisdom out there. Remember, Billy was on a few weeks back. We had him on the show as a guest. And he's a very, very enthusiastic bicycle rider and fundraiser, and does all sorts of cool things with bicycles, which is how you end up on the Bicycle Talk Show, because you're a cool guy that does cool things. Right, Billy?
Well, I guess so. I think Ron, you and I are cool when cool meant something, too.
Yeah, I that may very well be true. So relay your experience to us. What happened?
Well, let's see. As you know, I like my early morning rides, mm-hmm. just simply because there's usually less traffic. But one thing you have to realize at this time of year, the sun comes up a lot later.
Okay.
So, but I have the right equipment on my bike. I have a 700 lumen headlamp, which I can count the cracks in the road with that.
Yeah, that's like a car headlamp. It's pretty bright.
Much.
Yeah.
And I have a special tail light, strobe flashing light, that in broad daylight you can see a kilometer and a half away.
Hmm. That's good. That's good.
It gets your attention, and most people see it in a distance. So I'm going along, and I'm heading up a slight hill, and of course I'm motivated. It's about 5:45, maybe 5:50 in the morning. So the sun is just starting to come up. And I'm coming up on the road is one lane, fairly good-sized shoulder. I'm going up. I'm getting passed by cars. But, you know, they're giving me plenty of room. And comes apart. Now there is another lane that is merging into this climb. And you see, my motivation is my favorite coffee shop is at the top of this climb. So let's get down to important stuff.
Right. That sounds very important.
So I'm going along, and I look behind it to the get them on ramp where the roads are coming. I see in the distance, I see headlights. I says, okay, I'm good. And I did a quick sprint and fired across the up and across over the lane to the far right-hand side. And I'm going, and all of a sudden, I hear brakes squealing.
No.
Everything.
Oh, no.
And what happened was, let's see, all I said in my head was, this doesn't sound and good did not come out.
Oh,
I went down on the ground. I slid on my hip.
Mm-hmm.
And I came to a stop. First thing in my mind, Ron, and you'll appreciate this, first thought in my mind is, oh, no, not the bike.
Typical cyclist.
Yeah,
there you go.
I mean, it's a nice bike.
I know, but you know what? You can get another bike. You can't get another you.
I know that. I know.
You know, if we didn't have you, then we wouldn't have you on as a guest, and we wouldn't have you talking to us right now. So.
It's funny that you're giving him a hard time about this, but you know that "How's my bike?" is a meme when you go down on your bike. You get T-shirts that say "How's my bike?"
How's my bike? Right.
And you know, Franny, I know that, and I've seen it. And I never thought it would pop into my head when it happened to me. Because we used to joke with people who fell down on their bikes, how's the bike? How's the bike?
How's the bike? And that's it. You know, the perfect crash, if you could possibly have a perfect crash, which is not, it's never true. It's always bad to crash your bike. But the perfect crash is when you are able to somehow flip yourself around to a point where you put your body before the bike and then you slide to a stop with the bicycle up in the air so it does no harm to the bicycle. But that, of course, is in a very perfect world, and that usually doesn't happen from being hit from behind because now your bike's in trouble because you got hit.
Yeah.
So how was your bike?
So, well, you know, let's see. Well, first of all, when I got down, I do have to let you know one thing.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a fairly nice helmet, and it's not cheap, so as I'm hitting the ground, I made sure to pull my head up so the helmet didn't get pooched.
Oh, God.
And my shorts did not rip.
No.
No.
Wow.
But I have a massive bruise, a massive hematoma on my right hip.
Mm. Yeah.
So thank God for a big bag of peas. That always helps with icing.
That's right. That's right.
Arnica.
So Arnica,
baby.
Yeah, Arnica. Francis Arnica. You're getting that natural medicine response here.
You know, thank you for reminding me of that. I had a friend who swears by it, but yeah, okay. And I know there's a health food store where I can get it. Thank you, friend.
Okay, there you go. See, we're trying to help you.
So here's what's so what happened. I looked at the bike on the side of the road,
mm-hmm.
and at quick glance, it just looked like the rear wheel and the derailleur had the dropout on the derailleur had broken off, and the wheel was shot.
Right.
But the bike looked okay. So my friend Paul picked it up from the police department on Sunday, and he looked it over, and he said, I think it's just the wheel, dude. And
yeah.
If that's the case,
that's
well,
what...
although my bride Cindy did say, out of pity, if you want to get a new bike, you can get one. So,
opportunity time.
Yeah,
N,
I know.
N plus you know, one, N plus one.
I know. Brother Ron, I know the N plus one. and she says, you've already got... three bikes. What do you need a fourth? And so we won't get into that.
Well, that's a silly question to ask.
You can never have too many bikes. What if you need another bike for another purpose or in another color?
Hey, kids, that's a whole nother show. Come on.
Right, it is. But you know, and if you have, quote-unquote, too many bikes, then you obviously need a larger residence of which to store them.
But I have to say about the whole experience, you know, I hit the deck. The woman who was driving behind me stopped. And she gets out, and, you know, instinctive reaction, get off the road, get off the road, get off the road. I'm saying, no, I'm not moving.
That's what she said to you. She said, get off the road.
Exactly. I says, no, I'm not moving, ma'am.
No.
Assess the situation. What's going on? Are your flashers on? You're behind me. Your flashers are on. I'm safe. Make sure your flashers are on. Otherwise, you're going to get rear-ended. Another gentleman stopped. He stopped in front of me, put his flashers on. So now I'm boxed in, which is great. And he goes, did anyone call 911? And I kind of said, well, you know, my phone's all the way over there. And so he called 911. Police were there within 5 minutes. And they just, the cop was beautiful. He goes to me, so how you doing? And I thought him and said, You know, I've had better mornings.
Yeah. Yep.
And I haven't even had my second cup of coffee yet. So ambulance was there. They did an assessment on me. They stood me up, and they took me over to UConn. And I spent the night there because of the hematoma. I am on a blood thinner, and so they wanted to make sure that the bleeding had stopped. So I was getting jabbed for blood every 6 hours.
Uh-huh.
We all know, and when my back just is totally spazzed out at this point.
Lovely.
So yeah, but you know how, and you know how comfortable those beds are in hospitals for a stiff back.
Oh yeah. Well, the fact that you're in the hospital leaves a level of discomfort that is not desirable. But
yeah, no, and that's it. And you know the people, and you know, and hats off and kudos to the nurses and the physician's assistants at UConn. I mean, I'll give you a shout out right now. You guys were fantastic. You made me feel real good there, as good as you can when you're lying in a hospital, you know.
Well, you know, we checked up on you. You know, you're a friend. You don't just, like, you know, hear about this. And well, you called me. Didn't you call me?
Of course I called. No, I'm just, yeah. I'm saying a shout out to the nurses and the PAs.
Oh, the nurses and PAs, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
The doctor, the only thing they were really treating me for was the hematoma, because the x-rays for everything else showed negative. There was no breakage, there was no bone, so they're worried about the hematoma. The surgeon from the hematoma came in, didn't even tell me his name, spent about 30 seconds with me and walked out. So that's why I say hats off to the doctors.
Yeah.
Hats off to the PAs and the nurses.
Right.
Nursing assistants.
Right, right.
I felt royal. Oh, gosh. And the interesting thing about UConn, they have the new building. It has 169 rooms in it.
Yes.
One for each town in Connecticut.
Isn't
and
that clever?
In each of these rooms, there is a painting done in that town.
From each town.
I think that's
a nice touch. So shout out to UConn on that. Of course, we shout out from UConn every Wednesday morning because we are here at the University of Connecticut. But cool. So you were actually at the Farmington Health Center is where you were, right?
I was.
Yeah.
About 6 miles, 7 miles from my house. So they said, where do you want to go? I said, that's it.
Yeah.
So, you
might as well. I mean, yeah. You're right there. It's pretty close by, and they're generally very nice. We have an urgent care here up in Stores that Fran and I have both had the opportunity to walk through, and they just seem very nice. So big shout out to UConn. Hey, UConn.
Yeah, very happy with them. So I mean, all in all, you know, I had to think about myself right now. Yes, I like to ride early in the morning. Well, possibly not that early anymore, just simply because it is darker. Stays darker later in the morning, and traffic is increasing, and it doesn't stop the commutes from going into Hartford, you know. So
I want to talk about your light just for a second.
Oh, sure.
And we can go back to wherever you need to go, but
Absolutely.
So you said you have a 700 lumen light. The average car headlight is 700 lumens on a low beam and 900 lumens on a high beam.
Oh, wow.
How about that? So you were definitely to be seen, no question about that. I don't know what you're using on the rear. I have a light that pulsates a flash, which is like unbelievable. I can't remember how many lumens it puts out, but you can see it. They claim you can see it from a mile away. I don't know if that's true or not.
I think that's the same one we have. We won't mention the brand name on it, but I think it begins with a B.
Mine begins with an N, but, and mine also has a lane issue on it. So basically mine has two laser lights that shoot down and put you in a defined bike lane.
Oh, I got to get one of those.
Oh, it's the coolest. It's the coolest.
Now, if you really
I believe there are other manufacturers other than the N company that are making a light similar to this, but it's just brilliant because it basically gives you a 3-foot lane to ride in that is just a lit lane. Very visual, very obvious, pretty cool light. Very cool light. I was impressed when I saw it.
If you really love me, Ron, you'd get me one.
I might have one for you. So,
I'm going for the pity.
You never know. You know, I have some old samples kicking around. There's a solid chance that I can help you, especially if you're going to continue to ride in the darkness, which is always a little sketchy. So
yeah, well, you know, it's made me realize to pick my routes a little better, maybe, and you know, I mean, there's a couple of things in there, and it's like just because you start at the same time every morning, you've got to you've got to be aware of your environment, and that's the lesson I learned through this.
Well, I'm gonna throw something out at you too, not to pick on you, but you know you're a good target right now. So so what was the name of that road that you were on?
It was the Colt Highway, Route 6.
Yeah, yeah. I was just about to ask the next one. What was the number on that road? And it was a road with a number, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. See, Ron's rule number one is roads with names, not numbers. So,
but how is he going to get to his favorite coffee shop?
I know he has to get to his favorite coffee shop. I know it's a really
in the Northeast. We like to use the roads with just names.
Right.
But sometimes you got to go through a lot of numbers to get to those roads.
Oh, I know.
I
understand. I'm just giving you a hard time. That's all.
I know you are. And I'm just giving it back. I like riding in the Northwest, and you like riding in the Northeast. And
right.
The twain shall meet.
Yes. There you go. Aww. There we go.
Actually, I love the Northeast. That's
I know you do. I was going to say, you're going to have to take that back because you told me you really love the Northeast.
Oh, we were riding the other week, Ron, and it was just the most beautiful day, and you were the greatest ride leader that day, even though you didn't stop to fill up our water bottles. That's okay.
No, I didn't. But we had 17 riders on that ride also. That was a big day.
That was a lot of fun.
What a great route, too. I love riding out there. That's one of my favorite places to ride. It's just so pretty out there, and talk about lack of cars.
Oh,
definitely.
Yeah. Wow.
You could tell when we were getting back. We begin all our rides with our group, the Thread City Cyclers. Shout out to the Thread City Cyclers. We begin them all on Saturday mornings at the North Windham Elementary School on Route 203, which is close to Willimantic, close to Mansfield.
9 o'clock in September and 10 o'clock in October.
There you go. There you go. Nice. So anyway, we have these rides that leave, and you can really, when you go on one of these rides, until we get far enough away from there, especially if we're heading out to the east, you'll note that the traffic just gets thinner and thinner and thinner, to the point where when we were coming back, I realized that we hadn't really seen much traffic at all until we got back to almost the Scotland Windham line, and there were just no cars, which is cool, which is very cool.
Well, I have to say, my friend Paul, who was with me at the time, who said it was a beautiful ride, we got into the parking lot, and he said, "So, how did you like the ride?" And I said, "I could die right now and be happy."
No.
I mean, it was that good a ride. I mean,
it was a good ride.
Big smile on my face, and the weather was perfect. It wasn't too hot, and the company was great. And, you know, folks out there, just to let you know, Ron and I did a duet of Some Kind of Wonderful for our friend Mary Dean. Shout out to Mary Dean.
Yes, we did.
And because it was Mary's birthday the next day.
Right.
And, even though it's a Grand Funk song, I think our version was better, Ron.
I think we were superior by far.
By all means.
You know, one person that you got to watch out for when you get out there and start singing songs is when Fran comes out with you. The entire ride could be a series of songs as we're going along, right, Fran?
As long as it's Grateful Dead.
And especially if it's Grateful Dead. So, yeah, she has a tendency to break into song on a regular basis. So.
I don't understand. She has a tendency to break
into. Oh, my God, my iPhone is sitting here, and it's talking to me while I'm trying to talk on the radio.
No.
I don't know. I didn't ask it a question, but sometimes Siri can get a little touchy. Maybe I wasn't paying enough attention to her.
You know, she sets my soul on fire.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Ooh, when my baby kisses me, my heart becomes filled with desire.
There she is.
Surround. Anyway, I don't think, you know, people, we don't want to lose ratings here, guys, so let's not sing.
Okay. All right. No, I'm good with that. I'm good with that. So anyway, I'm glad you're feeling better. I hope to see you back on your bike soon. Is that you're not like, are you out of commission for a while? What do you think?
I mean, I'm not going to be riding for a while till this back actually felt, well, back actually feels pretty good. All right. I've got to cut this call short because I have the insurance company calling me.
I will
be on my ride soon.
You get on that. I will talk to you soon. Thanks, Billy. Thank you for calling
in.
Appreciate
care.
It. Okay.
Take care, Billy.
All right. That was our friend Billy Dujack, who had a close encounter of the worst kind with an automobile just recently, and we were just kind of going over that. I'm going to go through something in a little bit. I got a couple of other things to cover here of what you do if you are hit by a car. There are a list of things you can do that will be in your favor should you do that. And actually, this was put together by an insurance company. Believe it or not, made this list. So anyway, that's my rant of the week, is pay attention when you're driving your car. We are very soft and squishy. We do not like to be squished by large, heavy objects that are not paying attention to us when we're driving down the road. And remember, you, the human behind the car, and we, the human on the bike. Okay, we are just people out there. We are not a distraction to you. Obviously, not a distraction at all if you run into us. But anyway, on a positive side, I got a couple of things I pulled up here, which from the UN News, pedal power makes positive impact on climate. Urges UN on World Bicycle Day. And this came out in June, I believe, is when this article came out. It's kind of cool. Shows a bunch of people on bicycles. And it's just simple, affordable, environmentally friendly bicycle is not just a means of transportation, but it's also a tool for development. The United Nations said in a message on Monday commemorating World Bicycle Day. So that's kind of a cool thing. I thought that would be a nice thing to bring up on a positive side. And the other thing that I found is there's a site called We Love Cycling. And on this particular site, it says Rebicycle, EKE Rua, gives refugees bikes and teaches them to ride, which is cool. So New Zealand accepts 1,000 refugees a year. Many of them, new inhabitants, struggle to find reliable form of transportation. Getting a driver's license and acquiring a car can take years. So a charity organization working in the Wellington area came up with a solution, and they give people bicycles. How about that? That's a cool thing. So anyway, big, big shout out to them. Definitely fit into my positive side information here today. And I'm going to throw a couple of things out at you right now on the Maintenance Minute, which is up next in the Maintenance Minute. We're going to talk a little bit about that bicycle that I don't own, but I know a lot of people that do, and I used to. And riding my cyclocross bike on dirt roads a week ago made me think about this. So it's basically mountain bike maintenance tips, because when you get into the dirty and the muddy and all that, you know, your bike may need a different level of attention than your road bike does. Although your road bike loves to be attended to also, the mountain bike, because it is experiencing a lot more of the grit and the nasty stuff out there. The number one thing that you do on your mountain bike is clean your bike. Keeping it clean on a consistent basis is a surefire way of keeping everything going well. Use a biodegradable cleaner, like anything, like a simple green or an orange solvent or whatever, with water, and just clean things off really good. And then once you have done that and you wipe the bike all down to dry it up a bit, you want to inspect your brakes. And the brakes on mountain bikes, they are definitely prone to wear out quicker than the brakes on a road bike do, because you're adding grit and grime and dirt and all of that to the surfaces that you're braking against, whether it be a disc or whether it be a rim. You're still going to you need to check the brake pads, and you need to make sure that they are not worn down, and they do wear down over time and need to be replaced. By the way, big shout out, and Fran is going to jump on me on this one. I can feel it coming. If you ride disc brakes, the pads wear out a lot quicker.
Oh!
And Fran has got some pad squeal and issues going on her disc brakes right now on her gravel grinder bike.
You should check that.
So, yeah, I know. I should check that. But I can't do it right now because I'm on the air.
Oh,
but I might, you know, put that on the list and check it out. Watch your wheels, okay? Wheels, rims, basically hold your tires in place, provide stability while riding. Properly tuned and trued wheels that don't wobble or rub against the brakes mean consistent contact between the tires and the dirt. Now, this would be only in relation to a bicycle that has rim brakes. If you have disc brakes, you are given the, we'll call it the luxury of having your wheels not quite as straight as they could be. But I would still pay attention to it because a wobbly wheel will, you will feel it eventually, but it also could wobble enough to rub against the frame of the bike and therefore wear the frame or wear the tires out. So you need to be careful about that. And if you are not familiar with how to use a spoke wrench, you could go to your friendly local bicycle shop and ask them for advice, but I would rather go to my local friendly bike shop and hand them the wheel and say, you guys know how to do this better than I do, and do it that way. That would be my feeling. Inspect your drivetrain. That includes the pedals, the chain ring, derailleur, and all the moving parts that are going on back there. Make sure everything's in good shape. It's important because it transfers power generated by your legs to the rear wheel. So make it a routine part. And you know, you just want to take a look for excessive wear, missing teeth on the chain rings. Don't be fooled by some chain rings that look like they have missing teeth, but they aren't, because they're just step-up teeth to help enhance your shifting. So, you know, make sure you know what you're looking for there. But you want to check that out every once in a while. And this particular person is recommending every 2,000 to 3,000 miles to completely replace that drivetrain. Because, you know, sand and grit and all that, it wears things out a lot quicker. I think you just got to keep watching it very, very carefully. Check both your tires. Big one here. If you're riding your bike off-road, you've got roots and rocks and cracks and different things that your tires are dropping into, I would especially pay a really, really strong bit of attention to the sidewalls on your bike. And the sidewalls tend to get abraded, or they can get cut very easily. You just gotta keep your eyes on that. I would look every single time I got done with my bike ride. It's a good time to do it. It's when you're cleaning your bike off. Just take a really good look, because damaged tires are prone to burst, and they'll cause a sudden loss of control, which you're already working on control if you're off road. So you want to not deal with that. Cables, check your cables. This is all pretty basic stuff, but it is important that you check all this stuff out and make sure that your cables aren't fraying in any way. Or the other thing is that if you have a housing that's sticking out, it might get caught on a stick or something that you're riding by when you're off-road, because you can get into some kind of gnarly areas, and so you want to just definitely do that too. And then lubrication, of course, is really, really important. Everyone has an opinion on lubrication, especially on mountain bikes. A lot of people don't like to use anything that is overly petroleum-based, I guess is probably the best way to put it. And I know that dry lubricant tends to be sometimes more of an idea for folks who are riding off-road, because they don't want to pick up a lot of the dirt and the grime and get it ground into their chains. So it's really up to you as far as that goes. I would also check that chain carefully, especially if you just wash the bike down. Make sure it's dried up enough so you don't start getting rust on it. And anyway, that's what you got to do if you're riding a mountain bike and you're looking for some awesome bike maintenance that you can do on that. There are other checklists out there that you can follow through with, and you can check and see what other things you could do if you wanted to get really, really involved with it. But our maintenance minute is checking out that mountain bike, because it's kind of getting to be that season. You know, up here in the Northeast, you know, a lot of people, they still ride their mountain bikes in the summertime, but it tends to draw more people out in the fall when the weather starts cooling down a little bit. It's a lot nicer out on the trails, and it's kind of a cool thing. So anyway,
Are we going to talk about the Ashford Adventure Ride?
We can definitely talk about the Ashford Adventure Ride. So there's two things that I would like to, well, three things I'd like to talk about. We'll talk about the Vuelta, we'll talk about the Ashford Adventure Ride, and then we're going to talk a little bit about what you do when you get hit by a car and what you should do as a cyclist. But let's start with the Ashford Adventure Ride. Last weekend, Fran and I did the Ashford Adventure Ride. Remember we had our guest Mike on?
Yes.
Yeah, and he talked all about it, and we talked about the ride. And big shout-out to Nearak Earth and to Mike and Jill and all the other – the rest of the crew at Nearak Earth for putting on a very nice ride. It was – they had over 100 people show up for that ride. That was really well attended for, you know, the fact that it is a gravel-grinding ride and does have a limited audience. But I think that audience is getting bigger.
Yeah.
That's what appeared to me anyway. So anyway, Fran had some
issues.
Fran is definitely a roadie. There's no question about that.
Well, and I just don't practice on that kind of terrain.
Right. So we're going
to
work on
that.
But we're going to work on that. That's something that it can be developed over time.
Well, they had some roads on it that were you really kind of had to have skills to navigate. And there were three specific roads that were tough. One of them was Axe Factory.
Yep.
One of them was...
Which was an uphill on softball-sized boulder. So, you know, big rocks.
Yes. Yep. The other was Summer, which is in, I guess, Eastford, Nashford. That little
path through the woods, yeah.
Right, that connected, it connected, I think, North Road to Floating Road. And then it was right by
it was
the
North Road and Horse Hill Road.
There. And then the third one I had issue with was Middle Road. That was the one that was almost at the end, where we were near Nutmeg. You said we should have taken Nutmeg instead.
Yeah, we could have done that. And
right.
And you know that's should we do this again next year? And they're using the same route. I think we're gonna scoot over to Nutmeg because it's gonna be the same distance.
Well, and we can
it's
and
much
you,
nicer road,
right? And I think unless I get skills, I'd like to continue to do the ride. But we'll figure out where the difficult roads are and we'll reroute me.
Yeah.
But the other side of that is, do I want to practice on that kind of terrain? I think two things that I want to do is just take my gravel bike and just take it to Mansfield Hollow and start practicing riding around in Mansfield Hollow.
I think that would be a good idea. There are some trails that are challenging. There are also some trails that are very tame, and there'd be a good way to get your feet wet with it.
Yes.
And you certainly have the bike to do it. It's not a difficult bike to do it on.
Right.
So.
And then the other thing would be to, if I could try out a mountain bike and see if if I could handle a little bit more difficult terrain on a mountain bike.
Yeah.
But I mean, other than those difficult roads, it was a gorgeous ride. It was a beautiful,
beautiful
day.
It was
a gorgeous
beautiful
ride. It was lovely to be out there. If you go to Facebook, you can see some very silly pictures of me because, you know, I was having difficulty with the ride. So when I got to Frog Rock, I took a whole bunch of pictures of me and frogs, and that was a lot of fun.
Yes, you did. And I have a lovely photo, which I forgot to share with you, but I got this awesome photo of Fran, and we were on a section of I will call it a single track path in the woods, which I had no idea existed. It was off of Fire Tower Road. It went over to Frog Rock. And big shout out to Glenn Newcomb on that one. That was his. He found that.
Yeah.
So big shout out to Glenn if you're listening. That was by far one of the highlights of the ride in my eyes. I love that.
Yeah.
And then coming back through the Natchog Forest on the lower road in the Natchog was just really cool.
Yeah.
I love it out there. I had a good time. I really enjoyed it. And I know there were some places that were certainly sketchy. Sketchy is a good word. I think it's a good word. Had it been wet, it would have been sketchier, greasy, whatever you want to call it, but it would have been very difficult. But it was certainly, you could tell that there had been a lot of rain recently because there was an awful lot of washout on some of those roads.
Like
so you
rain.
Really had to pick and choose your way through. And so when you pick and chose your way through, you would, I would often look for places where there was grass growing that generally meant that there was going to be dirt underneath and so there's not gravel underneath. So you'd get a little bit more hard pack there. I also spent a lot of time dancing on the edges of the road where you could see that there wasn't a lot of loose gravel. And you're always looking for the hard spots.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're riding on terrain like that, you're always looking, you know, 8 to 10 feet in front of you. to see where you're going to be, not where you are.
You're always looking for the best line, and I'm pretty good at doing that, but I know myself, and if the rocks are the size of softballs and there's a lot of them, I wanted to ride my bike the next day, and I had a wonderful ride the next day because I went to Kovac.
Yes, you did. Yeah. Fran had a doubleheader weekend here.
Yes.
She did the gravel grinder, which was 42 miles. I would say it was 42 miles that I would tag at least another 15 onto as far as the amount that it takes out of you, the toll that it takes on you, because there were some difficult sections.
One of the things that I was finding is, you know, as I was getting through this difficult terrain, is that my brain was getting tired. I was starting to feel really tired, and it wasn't just my body that was tired. And I'm like, I was starting to feel like, I don't know if I can do this. You know, that like my head was being affected.
And you're spot on there, because our friends Sean and Kim from Ashford,
it
Kim?
Right. Yes.
Shout out to Sean and Kim from Ashford, who we rode with for a while. I had that conversation with them at the end of the ride, and Sean said, you know, you become very mentally fatigued when you ride your bike. They are strong mountain bikers.
Yes.
And he said you become very mentally fatigued when you ride your mountain bike or when you're riding off-road or on different difficult terrain.
Yeah.
That you have to really focus and put a lot more concentration into.
That's why mountain bike rides, they don't ride 42. I mean, they'll do it for adventure riding, but they don't ride, like, if you're going to
go out and ride for like an hour and a half, and that's it.
And they ride maybe 10 miles.
If they got 10 miles and they did good.
Right.
Right. It's true. It's true. It doesn't, it's a different discipline than riding on the road.
Yeah.
So anyway, I had a great time. I think it was really cool. I think they did a fabulous job with the event, as always. And we really look forward to doing more Nurek Earth events in the future.
Yeah.
And so big shout out to our friends at Nurek Earth.
I just wonder if they could have a course that for people like me who are like clueless on softball sized rocks, like just one that doesn't have that leaves out those particular roads. I
could talk to Mike about maybe helping him design one of those.
Yeah.
He sent me over this really cool link, and the link is to all of the dirt roads in the state of Connecticut.
Yeah, oh, that's great.
And that was really cool. That was totally cool.
Yeah.
So I'll explore that a little bit.
I mean, if people are good at, obviously there are people who are good at riding on that kind of terrain, and I don't want to take away from them, and I don't want to take away from the ride if they want to have it to be that level of challenge. I just know me, and unless I start getting really avidly into gravel or get some, you know, go and practice on off-road, I'm not going to get good at it. And I'm wondering if they had a ride that catered to people like me, that they would get even more people.
it's possible. You would have to, you know, it's possible. It's possible.
Yeah.
You know, there's definitely some, it's a matter of, you know, we live in a place that has some dirt roads, but most of our roads have pavement on them. So you have to kind of pick and choose carefully. And in order to put a loop together, like what they did, you sometimes have to go on roads that are less desirable than others.
Yeah.
So there is that. But there's probably some ways around.
Right.
Now that I've done this again, this is the second time I've done their event. I did their event a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And second time I've done their event, and it's got the gears spinning in my brain as to, you know, I want to do more of this. I think it would be a fun time.
All right.
So anyway, big shout out to Nurek Earth and the Ashford Gravel Grinder. If you missed it, you missed something. You missed something big. It was a good, good event.
Well, Frog Rock was one of the rest stops. That was so much fun. I don't know that I'd ever actually been there.
Yeah.
Did you know? I don't think I've been there.
Yeah. It was a state picnic area a number of years ago. Yeah.
Right. And now there's a little snack stand there. And sometimes there's music there. And there's a little porch. And on the porch is that silly you know, painted frog that looks very, he looks kind of glum, but he's painted in a very gaudy fashion. And there's a funny picture of me with him. And then there's another one. There was a little frog that was smiling that had a crown on it. That was a candle holder. and I picked it up, and it was very cute.
Did you share those photos to the Bicycle Talk Facebook page?
I don't think so.
I think you should.
All right.
I think you should share those over. So why don't you do that so that people can check this out and they'll know what we're talking about because, you know, we're radio. We're not very visual here.
So you want me to talk about Kovac?
And then you can tell us a little bit about Kovac. Okay. Yeah, sure.
All right. So Kovac is the Connecticut Valley Sentry. So big shout out to the Rotary Club of Amherst. That's who puts it on. And the director of Kovac, her name is Sandy Perrin. And I actually met her because she made herself obvious. She sent off a whole group of riders. So the check-in for Kovac is from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. And I didn't get there till slightly after 8 o'clock because I was only going to ride the 50. And I noticed that I was by far not the only one because a lot of people did not roll in at 7 a.m. However, when I got there, there were a lot of cars there, so a fair bit did. So they were doing the sentry. And the sentry's pretty popular because, well, it's not flat, but it's not super hilly either. And the last part of the ride is pretty rolling and flattish. So you can really motor for the last part of the ride because you're going along that Connecticut River Valley. It's kind of a long oblong. And so Sandy Perrin, I actually met Sandy Perrin at the rest stop, the firehouse in Deerfield. She was very concerned and interested in how people were experiencing the ride. And she liked the fact that there were lots of photos and she was taking photos herself. So that was cool. And so it's a charitable, it's a ride for charity. And so, you know, you are supporting the efforts of the Rotary Club of Amherst and they then go ahead and donate to other organizations. So it's a very pretty part of the state. If you do the full sentry, you go into Vermont and New Hampshire, but only if you do the sentry. Otherwise it's entirely in Massachusetts and it starts at a pavilion at a park in Hatfield, Massachusetts. And I only did the 50 because I had done the adventure ride the day before. And I also needed to visit my grandma, Sylvia, shout out to Grandma Sylvia, later in the day. So I wanted to be done a little bit earlier and not completely exhausted. So when you ride the 50, it was a little different than, you know, in the past when I've ridden the Sentry. Sentry, like we said, it goes all the way up to Vernon. You cross the border in Vernon, Vermont, and you go up to southern Brattleboro, and then in Brattleboro, there's a small bridge across the
I know that bridge.
Connecticut River, and it goes to Hinsdale, New Hampshire.
Right.
And then
it's kind of a metal bridge.
That's right.
Yeah. Yep.
And then you turn south, and then you're on your way back.
Yeah.
And there's a rest stop that's near the former Yankee power plant.
Yep.
I think that might be your second or third rest stop. Anyway, yep. Since I only did the 50, you turn back. There's a fairground or a carnival ground, and I don't remember what town it's in, and that's your decision point. So if you're going, if you're going to continue on the 75 or the 100, you turn left there, and if you're just on the 50, you turn right. So I turned right, and I was using Ride with GPS, which I'm finding that for these rides where I you know, they're not familiar roads, I'm really finding Ride with GPS very handy.
It's very useful. It's very
really
useful tool.
So you know where you are. If you don't know where you are, it helps you know where you are. And one of the things they did is they put us on the rail trail. So there was a few sections of rail trail, and it's a paved rail trail up there. And they put us on the Nauwatuck Bridge, the Nauwatuck Rail Trail Bridge, which is in Northampton. It's gorgeous. Have you ever seen it? It's something else. So I have some nice photos of the Nauwatuck Rail Trail Bridge, some really pretty pictures of the rivers, different river crossings, and you know, views through the trees to the river. I wound up, because I was on my own, I felt free to stop and just take pictures and just enjoy myself. So if you're on the 50, that's the other thing. I'm so not used to that because on the Farm to Fork Fonda, you get so many rest, like every 10 miles, there's a rest stop. This, if you're on the 50, you got one rest stop. You got to go to Deerfield and that was it.
Yeah.
And if you're on the Sentry, there's only three. You know, every 25 miles, there's a rest stop.
Yeah, but, you know, 25 miles is enough time to use up all the stuff in your pockets and clean off a couple of water bottles if it's a hot day. So it certainly makes sense. It makes sense.
And it's not an extremely hilly ride either. So,
You had some hills.
There's some hills. There's yeah. not no hills, but yeah. it's not. It's no steeplechase. Yeah. So. So anyway, I had a very nice time up there too. So big shout out to the Amherst Rotary Club for also putting on a very nice event.
Yeah.
And this may wind up becoming a tradition. They do the after adventure ride one day and do Kovac the next day.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
So that you've done this one before, right?
Kovac?
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've done it. I did the first year I did Kovac, I went with a bunch of people. I went with a bunch of people from Thread City Cyclers, and I got up there. I had just flown back from Florida visiting my folks, and my back was sore. So when I got on the ride, my back got really bad. So I wound up bailing in Deerfield because my back was that bad. I thought it was going to get better. I got on the bike. I thought it was going to improve as I rode on the ride, but it didn't. And it just kept getting worse and worse. And I was up there, and I had ridden with somebody else, and you had to come up and get me.
Yes,
so I didn't
I remember
do
that.
The I didn't do Kovac. I did Kova XXV. And then the next year, my back was much better. I think I discovered core work, and so my back didn't tend to go out nearly as much. So I was very fit, and I had a really nice. I did the Sentry, and I did the Sentry with a number of TCC people as well. And then I don't know that I did it every year. I did it again in with Cindy in 2017, and I did the full Sentry at that time. And then I didn't do it last year, and then this year just the 50. So did go by myself one year. Maybe it was 2015 or 16, and I wound up doing 75 because it was rainy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I like that ride. I enjoy going up there.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's what
happened. The Vuelta.
The Vuelta. España.
Remember how I talked about, last couple of weeks, I talked about how it looks like the Colombians are going to just sweep it?
Yeah.
Looks like it's not going to happen.
Oh.
Mm. So we have Primoz Roglic. Primoz Roglic is... 29-year-old Slovenian, and he's closing in on his first Grand Tour victory. He's got 2 minutes and change over second-place rider. So there's some stuff going on here. This, of course, I don't want to say anything too much today, but I because there have been some wiggle arounds, because I'll tell you that second place and third place are 20 seconds apart from one another. So 24 seconds apart to be exact, and fourth place is just another minute down from that. So that it's the race for second and third right now. It's pretty tight because the distance between the fourth place rider and the fifth place rider is 20-30 seconds. It's not much at all. So there, it really is the race for second and third right now. As long as Roglic holds it together, it looks like it's going to be his race. Just amazing, cool race. The climbs are disgustingly difficult. They're just really, really, really nasty. And, you know, I have caught a few short clips because the service that I purchased does not work anyway. So I've only caught a few of the races in short order. But these climbs are just brutal. They are just demanding, nasty, 20%ers, you know, just ugly, ugly stuff. So the climbs have been tough, and there were 8 mountain finishes. I mean, it's just big. I don't know if you got my sheet over there, Fran, but I put in tomorrow. Today's race is a flat race. I did get some word from, we'll call it race radio, that it was a very windy day and some things happened because of the wind today. But that's all I'm going to say because I don't want to spoil it for anybody who has not yet seen it and happens to be listening to us live. Tomorrow is just 177.5 kilometer ride race, and it's brutal. It just looks terrible. It has one, two... That's a one, that's a one, that's a one. There's 4 category one climbs, and they're just like, they're spaced evenly apart, and they just look awful.
Four peaks. It looks like meringue.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It looks like teeth.
Yes, yeah, it looks like teeth,
it
like
looks
cogs.
Like teeth. So, anyway, that's that's what's going on at the Vuelta. The Vuelta is very exciting this year. There's a lot of cool stuff going on. Nairo is still in there. Valverde is still in there. I'm just going to leave it at that because I just don't want to throw anything out that's going to give anything away today. But it's a classic Vuelta. It really is. I think it's probably a cooler Vuelta than normal just because they've spent so much more time in the mountains. But it's definitely an interesting race that I see right now. And their stage 17 has been completed, but there were a lot of crosswinds. That's basically what we know of stage 17 that I won't give any more away because I don't want to do any spoiler alerts here. But it's a pretty cool thing. The first place team is Movistar. Astana is the second place team, and Team Jumbo Visma is the third place team. So that's where we stand in team standings this year at the Vuelta. So the Vuelta is exciting. It is truly a mountainous monster. It really is. And it's cool if you're into that sort of thing. We're gonna move on beyond the Vuelta from this point, and I'm gonna talk a little bit about let's see here where it was next on my we can save some of this. I'd like to talk a little bit about, first of all, some things that are coming up. The Rocky Hill Cyclocross Series is on again tonight in Rocky Hill. You can go to Bike Ridge, and you can find information for it there. I would like to talk a little bit about if you're thinking of doing a cross race, I'm going to get into a little bit more detail about this next week. But if you've never done one before and you go, I don't know if I can do that, that looks really hard. Maybe you have a cross bike. Maybe you have a gravel grinder. Possibly you have just a mountain bike that you could use, because in a training race, I think they'll let you ride with a mountain bike. But don't mark my words on that. Please be sure that you check with the promoter first and be sure you can. But I know that in our Cat 5 race that we have, we do allow that to happen, only in the Cat 5 race, though, not in any of the others. So a few things. If you're new at this, you want to give it a try, you're primarily a rider, you've done a lot of road work, maybe you've done a little bit of off-road, you've ridden on some dirt roads, maybe you did the Ashford Gravel Grinder, and you go, hey, you know what? I did the Ashford Gravel Grinder. Now I'm going to go out and do a cross race. Well, it's a totally different experience. First thing being that it is way shorter. The race is going to be a 40 to 45 minute race max. So in a rare case scenario, it may go up to an hour, but that will be the worst of it. And one of the things that I tell people, first thing out, if they've never done a cross race before, I had two people that approached me about it in the last week. And I said, what you need to do is you need to practice your sprint out of the blocks. So you really need to practice your starts, and you need to be able to accelerate at a super high level. I give myself a lot of time to warm up beforehand. I make sure that I push myself up to an anaerobic state a couple of times to get the breathing up, to get the heart rate used to being able to push that, because there's a pretty good chance that you're going to be on the anaerobic and aerobic edge when you're doing the race. Remember, it's not that long, so it's a question of, you know, how long can I stay in the pain cave? And yes, I have to focus on concentrating on difficulties that are being thrown down in front of me. So I encourage people to find some sort of an obstacle that they can ride up to and dismount their bicycle and then jump over it and remount their bike. Those are just very, very simple things to get you started for cross season. But cross season is on us. This is New England. This is where we talk cross. This is where we do cross. We didn't invent it, but we sure did perfect it. So anyway, and we're a little snobby about it, but that's what it is. We've got awesome cyclocross here in New England. So if you're listening and you're from the West Coast, and I know that I have a bunch of West Coast listeners, and you ever get a chance to come out and explore this, even if you're only out for a week or so and you want to give it a try, give Pedaling Around a shout out. Fran and I would be happy to host you and point you in the direction of a true New England cross race. So it's a good experience. I know a lot of people that have come here to do the whole cross season out here just because they want to get better at it, because we've got some good stuff going on here, lots of competition. So anyway, the rest of my calendar is simply, if you go to the Bike Reg page, take a look. There's a lot of stuff coming up. There's a whole bunch of cyclocross races. The New England series, the Connecticut series is starting up very, very soon. And I can't remember if it's this weekend or the next weekend. Newtown, Belltown Cross. It's coming up pretty soon. So big shout out to those folks. I know it's a September race, and it should be pretty soon. But anyway, there will be more races after that. So lots of cool stuff going on here in cyclocross land. Great way to work on your bike skills. If you want to enhance your bike skills, consider mountain biking, consider cyclocross riding. You will become a far better bicycle handler, and you'll learn how to read your road better in front of you as you are being a road cyclist. If you are
Belltown is October 20th.
No, it's not.
That's what then, it says.
Then it must be Newtown that's coming up this
September
weekend.
September 22nd. Yes, is this
Newtown.
Week. Yes.
So that's coming.
That's coming.
That's next weekend, not this weekend.
Correct.
Right. Okay. So that'll be the beginning of the Connecticut series.
Yes.
So it is Newtown first. Okay. So anyway, my name is Pedaling Ron, and you've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, the amazing Fran Storch.
Oh.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this live or on podcast and you'd like to comment, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to more and past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, or better yet, be on the show as a guest, send an email to me, bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedaling Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS. Stores.